Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of AHA Presents About Education. I'm Neil Kreisel and I'm your host every week right here on AM 1290, repeated at 10, and on Saturdays at 4. We're brought to you by Deckers, makers of Uggs and Tevas, Pielefan Wendy Foster offering fine clothes, good food, and vintage wines, Montecito Bank and Trust proudly serving our communities and their financial needs for over 40 years, Habitat for the Humanity building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter, and CSU Channel Islands. No matter which of their academic programs you choose, you will be at the center of your educational experience. I'd like to welcome you all here today and also welcome our two new sponsors. If you're a listener of our show, you know that we have not had until today Habitat for the Humanities and CSU Channel Islands. I'd like to welcome them and thank them again for having the confidence to sponsor on our show. Today we have a really group of interesting guests. We have Keith Terry, who's Executive Director of YStrive for Youth, Michael Wild, their Educational Director, and J.P. Harada, who is their Outreach Director. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
So what does YStrive actually do?
YStrive does what a lot of the programs can't do. We impact the community from a family standpoint because we're in the community. YStrive looks at two things of importance. One is education and the other is employment.
And I understand the, unlike most not-for-profits in this town, this was created organically by the people that actually need the program.
Yes, YStrive was created by three teenagers from the West Side, who were in an alternative school and told that they were less than, or the term was, the dumb school. So back in 2006, they started a program that here in 2017 still exists.
And the program focuses on, and this term really needs some parsing down, at-risk kids, because a lot of groups use the word at-risk, but, you know, I guess your organization, we could put a capital in front of at-risk kids.
Well, I suppose you could, Neil. You could say they're probably at the highest of the at-risk scale. At-risk, all teens, especially in our community and the way society is today, all teens are at risk to a certain degree for different reasons. Our youth are generally those that don't do well in other programs. Our youth are often plagued with considerably more barriers and situations in their community and their families that most at-risk youth would not have been exposed to.
We had about a year and a half ago the then superintendent of schools for Santa Barbara on, and I asked him what was the most important initiative that he began when he took over, and he said the most important thing for him was equality. It was the idea that everyone should have an opportunity for an education and to be the best they could be. Is that actually possible without the help of organizations like yourself? Is it possible to have a public school that can really deal with everybody?
Well, I would ask Michael to speak on that.
I don't think so. I think what makes us what makes the elite in society is what they know. So you're familiar with Shakespeare. You're familiar. You know who Einstein is. You know, you grew up with a set of cultural norms that without those, you're an outsider. A person at a cocktail party can't talk to you if they don't know all of these things that you know. If they didn't grow up with, I don't think Toto that we're in Kansas anymore. You know, these are cultural norms that just are part of you. So if you don't teach children all of these educational
nuances,
they can't be part of the club.
And what they do get, a lot of these kids, is the opposite of an education. They get, you know, videos that are violent. They get movies that, I guess, are inappropriate. And so they sort of look at their world in a whole different way than the typical kid.
Well, I don't know if I would say that the movies or the television or the videos are the biggest problem. When you experience violence in your own home, in your own community, when JP can speak to this, the violence can not only be physical, it can be mental, emotional, it can be verbal. A lot of our guys and a lot of young ladies, and the systems that are already set up, they've experienced violence from the police. They've experienced violence from their teachers who tell them you're not going to amount to anything. So in a way, that type of violence is not necessarily dealt with, you know, on a systematic level. So it's difficult to say, how do we make it a fair playing field when we don't even know what the other players have to work with?
These kids have academic counselors in high school who tell them they shouldn't plan to go to college. They should go into some sort of, you know, mechanical program or you know, study to be a gardener or a landscaper. I have a kid who just was accepted at MIT who was told that she really, you know, shouldn't set her sights on college. This is the way they're discouraged from participating in the normal culture of our society. And you can talk
don't
about
it. Don't aim
this.
So high.
Yeah, go
yeah,
on.
Yeah, I've had kids tell me that their counselors tell them, you know, don't aim so high, because if you don't get in, then you're going to be discouraged and you're not going to want to try and so on. And, I mean, I've had kids who've moved on to college and universities, you know, but it was because of no help from their schools. The schools don't help out. You know, a large percentage of the kids that I deal with in the Latino community, most of them are in special ed, you know, and it's not because they need special ed. It's just an easier way for the schools to deal with them, to pretty much not really waste resources, but just kind of put them on, shelve them. You know, give them a packet and keep them moving forward, but not really addressing the issues or the fact that this education system is not doing the right thing.
Well, how do you do it? How, you know, tell us how you would change the education system. You know, you look at the other side of the table, and I'm not suggesting for a minute it's right, but people say, you know, my kid needs to have as stringent an education as they can, and if you take kids that are way behind, it's going to hurt my kid. Mm-hmm. How do you create a public school system that's not special ed, that provides for the kind of mentoring and extra help that mm-hmm. some of these kids may do need?
Well, you know, me personally, I think this is Michael's question, mm-hmm. but I do want to say, you know, with this whole No Child Left Behind was a big problem, because instead of hiring the bar, you actually dropped it down even more. So I think the biggest mistake that I see with a lot of the kids that we deal with is the fact that nobody's really expecting anything from them. You know, they don't really force them to turn in homework. They don't really put the standards of saying, you're here, now you should be up here. Like, so I think that we should really request more or want more from our youth who are in the schools. And instead, they want less and less interaction. So
my thing is, Neil, is that we have a system that's set up, And all the youth are supposed to fit into these little tiny boxes. You know, they shove them into these little desks. And they all look in one direction towards the teacher. And then if you try to work with another student, it's called cheating. But all of these skills, all of these things, cooperative learning is shown to be, you know, a great success in other areas. Businesses use them. The government uses them. But yet in our school system, we still deal with the same antiquated 40 students per one or two instructors. And then we want the teachers to actually have an impact. That's almost impossible. Can you imagine having a family with 40 kids?
Well, look, I think what we have here is a situation where it's going to get worse, because under the administration and under the new Secretary of Education, they want to cut public school funding. So what do we do this is a competent community, Santa Barbara. What do we do in the face of declining revenues for the public school? Santa Barbara School District, which is an excellent school district, is fighting, I don't know, a $9 million budget deficit. How can we, without the kind of money that would make it a lot more likely to succeed, how do we deal with all these kids and not go to 50 kids in a classroom? We'll have to wait for that answer. You've been listening, and we'll be listening to Ha Presents About Education on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
Mm-hmm. Here's a question. Do you enjoy experiencing the best of Santa Barbara? Tasty restaurants, scenic hiking, local banking experts. That's right, local banking experts. Montecito Bank and Trust was voted best bank again by the Santa Barbara Independent, Santa Barbara News Press, and Santa Ynez Valley News Readers. Plus, they have over 40 years of experience, 10 branches from Solvang to Westlake, a convenient on-the-go mobile banking app, and a savvy team of local decision makers. Visit Montecito.bank today. Montecito Bank and Trust, member FDIC.
In 1962, Pierre Lafond founded the first post-prohibition commercial winery in Santa Barbara County. In 1972, he planted his first vineyard in the San Ynez Valley west of Buellton and later hired legendary winemaker Bruce McGuire to continue to build on the stellar reputation that Santa Barbara Winery has achieved for more than 50 years. Today, you're invited to experience the award-winning wines at Santa Barbara Winery at the corner of Yananali and Anacapa and the Lafond Winery at 6855 Santa Rosa Road in Buellton.
Deckers Brands, the parent company of global lifestyle footwear brands UGG, Teva, Sanuk, Hoka, and Anu, invite you to experience their new brand showcase firsthand in Goleta. Discover new product, try on a range of offerings from your favorite Deckers brand, and get a peek into the company's headquarters. The brand showcase is open for business Monday through Saturday from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. and from 11 to 5 on Sunday at 250 Coromar Drive in Goleta. See you out there.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership and has repaired over 35 homes through the Your Brush with Kindness Home Repair Program. This spring, Habitat will begin construction on its fourth affordable housing development in Southern Santa Barbara County. Located in Carpinteria, Habitat will build three new affordable homes available for homeownership by qualified low-income families. Support Habitat by volunteering, becoming a monthly donor, or shopping at the Habitat Restore. More information can be found at sbhabitat.org or calling 692-2226.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA using innovative social-emotional learning and character building to help teens. We're here with Keith Terry, Executive Director of Why Strive for Youth, Michael Wild, their Education Director, and J.P. Harada, their Outreach Director. We were just talking about the issue of how we can make our schools more responsive to kids, not just kids at risk, but, you know, I've told this story before. If my parents hadn't got me a psychiatrist, tutors, you know, I'd probably be, you know, working at a gas station. You know, it really takes a village, you know, and you look at yourself, as many people do, and say, boy, am I a success. Well, you'd have to look at how much help they had. I have looked back and I realized it wasn't for my parents, you know, with all the degrees I have, you know, I couldn't read or write in the second grade. So, what is there, if you had a wish list, do you actually have a wish list of what could be done in the school system that would actually work today?
Well, one of the things, and I'll defer to Michael here in a moment, but one of the things I wanted to touch on is you're exactly right, Neil. Without the resources that you had and the resources that a lot of children have, private tutoring, they get dropped off to school, picked up from school, they get breakfast in the morning, they have money for lunch, they're wearing all the right clothes, and their parents have a college education. Without having those things in place, it makes it much harder to say we're going to level the playing field and everybody's going to just be the same. One thing I think that's really important is that we involve the parents in the educational process. Now, for a lot of parents, that, you know, it may sound like, you know, I'm already busy. I send my kids to school. The school's supposed to do its job. That's true. But in our parent program, we had parents who had never gotten off the couch to help their kids with their education. So after meeting with us and after a year, almost a year and a half of parent group meetings, these parents started their own parent organizations to support their kids. Children can't do it in a bubble. They need the entire family.
When City College started Running Start, which is a program to put a cohort of kids from the high school into a summer school program so they could have intensive learning as a group, they found the only way they could get them to go is if they paid them to go, because the parents wouldn't let them come. The parents said, hey, this is summer, go get a job. So the school had to pay them because the parents were resistant to help to get them to be able to go through college. So there's you're fighting so many battles, so many fronts.
All right, well, Yeah, I'm sorry. This man goes out into the community and identifies these kids. You know, he sees the way
this man
they
is
live,
JP, and, by the way. Yeah. This is radio.
I'm sorry. I'm pointing at the red shirt. I get us all confused with our red shirts today.
So to touch on what you were just talking about, you know, I think that in the Latino community, we have a misunderstanding of what our responsibility is to our kids and with the education system, right? I have a lot of parents who may be from Mexico or just come from a different culture, and their expectation is that the school knows what's best for my child. And sometimes we have to shake that into them to say, no, the one that has the best interest for your child is yourself. So you need to be a part of it. You need to be volunteering. You need to really ask questions of why is my kid in the same ESL class for the last 10 years.
But the school also needs to be receptive. I've had parents say that they're treated by administrators and teachers as if they're second-class citizens.
Right.
Like, I don't have to speak to you. Like, what are you doing here? Why are you bothering me? See, what I think a general understanding about the public school system is that's been lost is that they actually work for us. Yeah. They work for the public. They're the public school system. They're not in charge of our kids. They don't control our kids. They are servants. They're supposed to be helping us as a community. And I think it's gotten kind of misconstrued, you know, when people get a bunch of degrees and nice pieces of paper on their wall. Yeah. They think that makes them better than someone else as a human being. It doesn't. The biggest problem is that the children are lost in these 40-plus classes. It's ridiculous. It's no way you can raise 40 children in your home. Why do you think one person can do it in a class?
Right.
And the community itself, and we bash the school system so much, I think we have an obligation to help the school system. You know, the time that we have, we need to be putting forth our efforts as adults. Yeah. We need to volunteer as tutors. We need to come and help the staff. I mean, we need to be involved in the education of our future, because if we don't take a more active part in what comes out of this public school system, then we're going to continue to have the ills that we have now.
Not to be overly controversial, but I've been doing the show for 4 years now, and I've had everybody from the school system on, and this is the first time I've had a guest talk about the lack of concern or the irresponsibility of some teachers in the school system. This has never come up before. It has always been that they've been overwhelmed, that there is these issues of, you know, a lack of support at home, and that kids have come with all kinds of trouble. But the thing about our school system is that we really try hard to give everyone an opportunity. You're the first group that has ever sort of made it made a statement that usually gets directed to Cleveland or Detroit, but not here. So this is new information for me.
And you know, the thing about it, though, I mean, Santa Barbara, my biggest frustration is the fact that there are so many resources here in this community that, quite honestly, never reach the community.
Why is that?
Because, like I said, it's too hard to provide services. It's too hard if you have, let's say you're working with 100 kids and 95 of them obviously don't make it through your program. It's easy for organizations in this community to basically say it's the community's fault and not maybe the way my program is structured, you know? So when the people are donating money to certain organizations, they never really, there's no connection to seeing if their money's actually making an impact.
Okay,
the system is set up so that people can assuage. We live in Santa Barbara. This is a giving community. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, we have the best dressed homeless people in the country probably here. I see people, asking, you know, for money on street corners dressed better than I am.
Yeah.
And so because everybody feels guilty about living in a paradise type place. And so everybody gives, even people who don't have enough give. I work with kids in a very small group. So I taught at USC, I taught graduate seminars, and I teach these kids as if they were in a graduate seminar. They work at a round table.
Okay,
if
do they behave? Hungry, so let me interrupt you there. You know, one of the subtext of what you were saying is that sometimes the high schools can't deal with kids because they're not paying attention. They're acting out. How do you? You don't have a problem?
We write a check to a program, right? We give to the Santa Barbara Foundation, or we give to someone else. We don't roll up our sleeves and get involved. But we need to roll up our sleeves and we need to give money too. But we need to say, how can we help? Do you guys need books? What do you need? The school system is overworked and overloaded, and there's no question about it. There have too many kids in every classroom. I limit my classes to 8 or 10 kids. I can look in each of their faces. I can look in their eyes and see if they understand. I can ask them questions about what they've read. I can get responses from them that make sense. The kids are learning in my classroom because each of them is important to me. I know all of their names. I know their life situation. I know what their families are like. That doesn't happen in a public school.
Are they being tutored or are they getting this for credit?
No, they're not getting. This is what they're doing in addition to their regular school.
Okay, so that was just not knowing who these kids are. These would sound like, you know, superstar motivated kids that would be willing to do this. How did you get them to do this if they're not super industrious?
Well, one of the main things we do is we speak to the people that we serve personally. We get to know them. So and what we form is we form a community. We form a group of people who actually care about each other and work together and motivate each other. It was a question asked to me once, how do you motivate gang members to paint over graffiti? And my thing is, you don't. These young men in the community are motivated by having their community look good and to help out the store owners who help them in their time of need. So if we gave the community the resources it need, they could fix their own problems. We wouldn't need hundreds and hundreds of nonprofits which suck up a whole lot of money so that they can pay themselves hundreds and thousands of dollars and say, I'm doing good. It's ridiculous, Neil. It's ridiculous how much money is actually eaten up in the process. They never, like JP said, they never actually reach the people.
How do you do, speaking of JP, how do you do outreach? What is it, just referrals, or do you actually go out there?
No, I'm out there in the middle of the night. I'm out there in the middle of the night. I come from this community. You know, I was here since I was 5 years old, so I know every neighborhood. I have history with every neighborhood. So the kids that we're actually targeting, like he was saying, is the high-risk ones. I know their families. I know the history of the families. I know sometimes I interview the whole family, and, you know, you're talking about 3 families and a 2-bedroom apartment. So we get to see all the complexities and all the issues that that individual is going through. And then finally, after you do all that, you're making all the proper referrals. But, you know, when we refer them out to White Stripe, it's everything from schools, from job training, from simple how to be manners or even how to speak. I mean,
but there's a missing link. I don't understand. You get on, you see them on the street. Mm-hmm. And now they're in White Stripe. Why do they listen to you? They got their buddies. You know, what they want to go into a classroom instead of hanging out with their friends. I mean, how do you do it? I mean, you obviously do it. How do you do it?
Well, like I said, you know, when you're interviewing them, there's history there. There's history already. The biggest thing that you have to explain to a child is that whatever they're going through, it's not new. Their parents went through exactly the same exact struggles that they're going through, a failing school system, lack of jobs, lack of opportunities. These are nothing new. So once you're able to show them that this is history just repeating itself, and while other people were waiting for that hand up or the hand up and that never came, we basically describe it to them that, you know what, forget about waiting for somebody else to help us. We need to do it ourselves. And how do we push ourselves? How do we lift ourselves up without depending on anybody else?
So the 3 kids who started Wise Drive, that was their idea, right? And we're all involved because it was a good idea and it works.
You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on the Santa Barbara News Press radio station. We'll be right back.
Here's a question. Do you enjoy experiencing the best of Santa Barbara? Tasty restaurants, scenic hiking, local banking experts. That's right, local banking experts. Montecito Bank and Trust was voted best bank again by the Santa Barbara Independent, Santa Barbara News Press, and San Ynez Valley News Readers. Plus, they have over 40 years of experience, 10 branches from Solvang to Westlake, a convenient on-the-go mobile banking app, and a savvy team of local decision makers. Visit Montecito.bank today. Montecito Bank and Trust, member FDIC.
In 1962, Pierre Lafon founded the first post-prohibition commercial winery in Santa Barbara County. In 1972, he planted his first vineyard in the San Ynez Valley west of Buellton and later hired legendary winemaker Bruce McGuire to continue to build on the stellar reputation that Santa Barbara Winery has achieved for more than 50 years. Today, you're invited to experience the award-winning wines at Santa Barbara Winery at the corner of Yananali and Anacapa, and the Lafond Winery at 6855 Santa Rosa Road in Buellton.
Deckers Brands, the parent company of global lifestyle footwear brands UGG, Teva, Sanuk, Hoka, and Anu, invite you to experience their new brand showcase firsthand in Goleta. Discover new product, try on a range of offerings from your favorite Deckers brand, and get a peek into the company's headquarters. The brand showcase is open for business Monday through Saturday from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. and from 11 to 5 on Sunday at 250 Coromar Drive in Goleta. See you out there.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership and has repaired over 35 homes through the Your Brush with Kindness Home Repair Program. This spring, Habitat will begin construction on its fourth affordable housing development in Southern Santa Barbara County. Located in Carpinteria, Habitat will build three new affordable homes available for homeownership by qualified low-income families. Support Habitat by volunteering, becoming a monthly donor, or shopping at the Habitat ReStore. More information can be found at sbhabitat.org or calling 692-222.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA, improving attitude, creating social harmony, bridging the achievement gap for teens. We're here with Keith Terry, Executive Director of Why Strive for Youth, Michael Wild, its Education Director, and J.P. Harada, the Outreach Director. And we're having a very interesting conversation about what we as a community and, quite frankly, as a nation need to do to make sure everybody has the same opportunity to be all they can be. And it's obviously not that easy, and it's going to get worse if we don't have the resources. But it seems to be, Michael, that even without resources, you really can make a difference. And your classes are like 9-10 kids?
Yeah, nobody in this group is making a six-figure salary. Nobody in this group is making any salary. We're struggling along to, you know, I feed my kids. When they come to class, if they're hungry, they can't think. So, you know, my wife makes French toast and in the morning classes. Last year, we read eight novels with a Saturday reading class. The second Saturday reading class is now on its third novel. I have two reading classes on Saturday just for reading, just for kids who need to come up to speed in reading, because you can't do mathematics if you can't read. You can't do history if you can't read. You can't do philosophy or art or anything else if you can't read instructions. Used to send letters home to parents in Spanish. Half the parents don't read Spanish.
Yeah. You have to translate for them.
So it doesn't matter. The school system says, well, we try to get the parents involved. We send these things home. The parents can't read them. Mm-hmm. They can't help their kids with their homework. The kids need to learn, and so we try to give them the knowledge that they need to survive.
You know, I want to go back real quick when we're talking about how you recruit people for the programs, right? I've had kids referrals from family members, from schools, from counselors, teachers. I mean, every walk, even other organizations, right, refer me kids. And they always come with that exact same label, you know, gang member, gang member, gang member. And I can honestly tell you that out of 100% of the kids that I took in, only 5% were maybe gang members. The rest of them were just regular kids that lived in the community, but because they dressed in a certain way, everybody assumes that they're automatic gang members. And I think that's the biggest problem, because when you have other organizations out there who are looking for funding, all they have to show you is a picture of a brown face, and foundations go crazy because they say, oh, well, yeah, okay, that looks like an at-risk kid. That looks like a gang member. When the reality is just a small percentage of the Latino population, right? But we have this big old perception that when you see kids riding in dark clothes that they're all gang members. So with YStrive, what we do is, like I said, we actually look at the kid. And then once we interview the kid and the family and everything else, my job is to go back to the neighborhood and find out from the gang members, do you even know this kid? And I can tell you 90% of the times they'll tell you, I don't even know who that kid is. Does he live here? You know, so they have no connections to him. So it's like, okay, perfect then. This kid doesn't need that type of help. But let's see what other helps he might need, you know? And that's where we kind of...
What if he is a gang member? You don't pass on him. You'll help him.
No, those are the ones we're after.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Those are the ones we're after those are the ones that nobody else wants to take on.
But also, I've noticed with young men who find themselves affiliated or involved in gangs, they seem to have a work ethic that a lot of teenagers don't have. You know, they understand the group mentality. They understand that everybody does their part. And we seem to have better strides with them than we do with those who come from affluent families who things have been given to them their whole lives. So just to touch on what you said about City College is that the Running Star program, they had to pay them in order to come. We were working with one of their alternative schools here in town, and we were ousted because we were paying the kids to go to school. I mean, the same thing they're doing at City College, we were told is unheard of to do at the high school level. But what they did is we didn't just pay them to show up. Attendance was part of it. You know, not so much that they got paid for A's and B's in their grades. They got paid to actually put forth the effort to participate in class, to be a good citizen in class. You know, so we tell them we're doing all of this education. We're doing all of these things so they can go out and get a good job. Mm-hmm. But the whole time they're doing it, that the only thing they should look forward to is getting an A in class. And that's great. But I don't know how many teachers who would go to work if the principals just decide to give them an A rather than a paycheck.
Remember Dr. Jeffrey Canada when he came into town, the guy that did the Brooklyn Project? You know, when we're doing that, when we're paying kids to go to school and put in an effort and really, you know, put in a lot of work, and we're telling foundations, like, yeah, we want to give them money. We want to pay them for doing these things. They looked at us all crazy, like, what? They should want to do well. Well, yeah, but they're trying to survive. Like, they're trying to help out their family, buy food and everything else. When he came in and he gave a presentations to the foundation roundtables here in Santa Barbara, they asked him, they're like, well, how do you get your kids motivated to want to excel in school? And he said, very easy. I pay them. And I just remember every foundation's face just kind of look at each other and look back at us. And the thing that they were basically ridiculing us and telling us that we shouldn't be doing, they brought in this guy and gave him like $10,000 to come and speak. And he basically told them the same thing. Like, I pay them. I pay them so they can tie in or make the connection between education and money. You do well in education, you can get a better chance with money.
See, the thing about it, it's I think charity is something that we need to put behind us. I think giving people stuff and then becoming beholden to you or depending on you, and most organizations just give. You don't have to earn anything. In WiseDrive, you have to earn what it is that you get. We don't just give you money. You know, if you need food for your family, you can come and work. You can come and help out. You can come and help package food for other families. And then that way you can get some, you can earn some food for your own family. So if we don't teach them how to earn on their own now, Neil, then later on we're going to be taking care of them. And I don't know if this is a conservative standpoint, but I'd much rather have you working and paying taxes and spending money in the community than locked in a cell and I'm paying for your livelihood.
You know, incarcerating someone costs more than college.
Yes.
It's insane.
Yes.
The whole idea that you'd rather spend money for them to go to prison rather than college is and not be productive is economically something that it should be a very conservative political view.
But you know what the crazy thing is? I mean, why is it that we're okay with it as a community? You know, why is it that we're all right with that?
I'll tell you why. Who knows? But I think that part of it is there's a perception that people in who break the law are violent and people are afraid. I think it has to do with fear. Do you remember when the Saks parking lot incident happened?
Yeah, my brother's the one that stopped it.
Okay, well, that changed a lot of perceptions in Santa Barbara. Everyone in Santa Barbara who lived in Montecito and these places said, it's not here. It's in Oxnard. It's in Detroit. It's not here. When there was a event in the Saks Fifth Avenue parking lot, all of a sudden people said, whoa, it's in our community too. Yeah. It's always been in our community. But
we used to have a sheriff's department tell us that it's okay for us to kill each other on our own neighborhoods. Just don't bring it out in the community. I mean, and this is back in the 90s, you know, and nothing changed.
Well, you know what's interesting? You know, Santa Barbara is such a rich community, but apparently it has the highest percentage of kids on food programs in the schools of any county in California. Which is so interesting that you would think that it would be not, but it is.
Yeah.
You're listening to AHA Presents on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
Here's a question. Do you enjoy experiencing the best of Santa Barbara? Tasty restaurants, scenic hiking, local banking experts. That's right, local banking experts. Montecito Bank and Trust was voted best bank again by the Santa Barbara Independent, Santa Barbara News Press, and San Ynez Valley News Readers. Plus, they have over 40 years of experience, 10 branches from Solvang to Westlake, a convenient on-the-go mobile banking app, and a savvy team of local decision makers. Visit Montecito.bank today. Montecito Bank and Trust, member FDIC.
Agency.
Celebrating 50 years of serving loyal regular guests and first-time visitors, the Pierre Lafond Market and Deli invites you to enjoy their huge selection of fresh-baked sweets, cookies, carrot cake, muffins, and the famous farm cake, granola, Oreo popcorn, wine cake, homemade soups, and the popular fresh juice bar. Or get a coffee drink or fresh squeezed juice and peruse the famous wall of greeting cards at the Pierre Lafond Market in Delhi. Open 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. daily in the Plaza del Sol, Montecito Village.
Available only at the company's headquarters in Goleta, the new Deckers brand showcase features the latest footwear from UGG, Teva, Sanuk, Hoka, and Ahnu brands. You're invited to stop by to experience firsthand what makes Deckers brand so unique. Discover new product and try on a range of offerings from your favorite Deckers brand at their retail stores. Now open to the public 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. Monday through Saturday, and from 11 to 5 on Sunday at 250 Coromar Drive in Goleta.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership and has repaired over 35 homes through the Your Brush with Kindness Home Repair Program. This spring, Habitat will begin construction on its fourth affordable housing development in Southern Santa Barbara County. Located in Carpinteria, Habitat will build three new affordable homes available for homeownership by qualified low-income families. Support Habitat by volunteering, becoming a monthly donor, or shopping at the Habitat Restore. More information can be found at sbhabitat.org or calling 692-2226.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA, helping teens achieve goals, surmount challenges, stop bullying, communicate, and listen effectively. We're here with Keith Terry, the executive director of Y Strive for Youth, Michael Wild, its educational director, and J.P. Harada, the outreach director. So we are talking about working with kids that have special problems. What about a kid that's violent? How do you integrate a kid like that into a classroom?
Okay, what makes a kid violent, Neil? See, kids express violence because they've been exposed to violence. That's generally the case. It's rare that you get a child that comes from a nice, peaceful, happy home and they turn out to be violent. If you have violence in your community, violence like you mentioned earlier, violence on TV and in games and in movies, but I think one of the biggest things is that we're told to be peaceful when our own government is one of the most violent governments in the world. I mean, we create more violence in other nations, in other countries, than anybody here. And now we want our people to be peaceful. So if we're going to teach peace, if we want things to be nonviolent now, then maybe we should stop being nonviolent against our own citizens. Maybe police officers should stop shooting unarmed people. Maybe we should have people treated more with more respect when they're going through the judicial system. You know, perhaps we should have parents accepted more readily in schools to speak to administrators and teachers who most of the time won't even answer their emails unless they CC me. So violence is something that's been a part of this country. It's the makeup of this country. The people who first came here and took it by violence. So I don't know how we want everybody else to be peaceful when the majority of the people here were brought up on violence.
In my class, so these two guys, JP and Keith, they're on the front lines, and they see a different side of the kids. I see them in a classroom around the table. If they're hungry, they get fed. If they're hungry for knowledge, they get fed. After a while, they understand how it works, and when they realize how it works around my table, they realize how it works in the school system. Okay. Once they have enough knowledge to where someone can ask them a question and they can answer it for the, quote, smart kid in class, then they have a hunger for more knowledge because that feels good.
Could you share some success stories so we can have a more upbeat kind of focus?
I knew that was coming.
I can't give names. Because
No names.
But I have a girl who just got, I have a girl and a boy. One got accepted to MIT early decision, they call it. Another to Stanford in early decision.
Okay, so tell us about that, those two kids when they were 11.
Single parent, low expectations from the school system that they were in. in and out of actually the school, some little homeschooling going on because the parents didn't feel the school system was doing what they needed. They came to my program. They went to a parochial school for a while. They tried all sorts of different things. They usually end up staying with my program, and I don't know why. Maybe the food.
I have another young man. Well, he's not that much young anymore. He's 27 years old. Just had a child. We started working with him when he was in the 10th grade. There was at one point there was a thing called Gator Roll here in Santa Barbara where they rounded up about 70 of my guys and took them down to federal court and tried to get them on the RICO Act, and which was hilarious because RICO and the whole mafia was enterprising. And the point that they were making is that these are enterprising gang members in Santa Barbara. And I'm like, who are you talking about? Because half the times they're asking me to buy them a bag of chips. And their parents buy their clothes. So I really don't know what they were trying to do, but round up 70 people who had already gone through the process of starting to change their lives. One of the young men was in my office in khakis and a polo shirt. He had applications filled out. He was going to look for a job. A week later, his house was raided. Guns were pointed at his family members, and he was taken down to federal prison. This 27-year-old man, I had to, oh gosh, I don't know if I want to say this on the radio. I actually put up my own personal vehicle as part of the bond in order to get him out. We're not your normal, regular, everyday program. I'm not an executive director who sits in my office and crunches numbers and go rubs elbows with the societal elite so we can get funding. How can you teach somebody to be self-sufficient when everyone in your entire organization is begging for money?
So what do you think has motivated you to be so dedicated and so willing?
Neil, what motivates you to do this radio program?
Well, right? You know what? I'm going to give you guys more credit. You know, for me, I do the show and then I can go home.
You want to make a difference, right?
Yes, but
so
I'm giving
we.
You guys more props because you do this 24 hours a day. And you know something? When I started teaching, I taught for City College for 12 years after I came out here, and I was retired, and I felt I should teach. And I learned an incredible lesson. I the first semester, I said to the head of the department, I'm going to quit. I'm not effective. I think of the 30 kids in my class, only three learned anything. And he said, that's okay. You saved three kids' lives.
So,
and I never understood that.
Let me jump on that particular thing. The fact that you are actually thinking about quitting, that actually goes to show you that, you know what, you're the right individual to keep doing that. There's a lot of people out here who have been doing and running organizations for over 30 years, have not made an impact at all whatsoever, and are all about the money, and they're still out here, and they don't want to give that up. And we have that problem out here. So for all of us who are doing the actual work on the streets, I think it's because we're pretty much tired of waiting for somebody else to make that impact that needs to happen. You know what I mean?
So somebody has to.
I'm tired of going to funerals. I'm tired of watching young 14-year-old kids get put into a system that hopes to keep them involved for the rest of their lives,
yep.
A prison system so they can make money off them. I'm tired. I am sick and tired of watching young lives be destroyed by a system that really doesn't care about them but yet makes money off of them.
Look, I made a mistake as a 12-year-old, right? I joined the neighborhood. I joined the gang, right? I'm 43 years old right now. And it's funny because behind my back, I still have probation officers or people who run in organizations not describe me as a person who does outreach or who runs an organization or is working with somebody. They describe me as, oh, the gangbanger. So that one action still defines my life the way other people see me. And I mean, and I thought we're living in a society where we're supposed to be able to make mistakes and learn from them and evolve and move on. But that one thing still defines who I am or who people think I am.
So
no.
I work with kids who tell me at 13 that they expect to be jumped into a gang. If you're a boy, this means you get beat up. If you're a girl, it means you get repeatedly raped. But they expect to be jumped into a gang. I'm trying to keep them from getting into those gangs.
There's a professor, I forgot his name, I'm trying to think of it for the last 10 minutes, at City College. He teaches philosophy. I don't know if you know him. But
Manny. Yeah.
And Manny tells it a fantastic story. He was a... a troubled youth. Mm-hmm. And
is that what he calls himself?
Yeah, and by the way, he's a professor of philosophy.
We know him.
He's
yeah,
the real deal.
Yeah. We know
and,
him.
And yes. but he's told so, he told us something once that really sort of opened my eyes. He said, if you are living in the life I was living, and you get called in by the police, and you get put into jail, you're going to see your friends. He said it was like, okay, now I'll spend 2-3 days here. I'm with my buddies. It wasn't until he read a story by Socrates that it's the something of the cave where he began to reflect
yeah.
upon.
The myth of the cave. Yeah, we do it all
right.
the time. Allegory of the cave.
Allegory of the cave. But with the social environment was such that it was okay to go to jail because you just kind of, you know, continue the party there. And that was like, you know, so...
I teach the allegory of the cave yeah. to these kids. Okay, so they understand it. They know what it means, and they know how to describe it to other kids. Mm-hmm. So the ability to absorb information is not restricted to one race or one background. These kids are sponges when they're little, and they're able to learn. They're just not – people don't believe that they're able to learn.
Well, I'm on the other side. I believe that they're learning exactly what the community wants them to learn. You know your place, know your limitations. You know, a lot of the kids, like I said, you know, they might not realize this, but as an adult, you come to the realization that, you know what, there's a system that's put in place in our communities, in our society, right? And then there's the kids who are growing up in this environment who see limited opportunities, and they know exactly where they're heading. When I was growing up, I already knew I was heading for jail. You know what I mean? It's just a matter of time. So you have one or two choices. Either one, you can go crazy because you know what's waiting for you, or you can try to make the best of it and choose your own terms and conditions for going to jail. But at the end of the day, it's the same outcome, you know? And that's the environment that we're trying to break them from.
Well, I'm glad I asked you to talk about uplifting things because we were sick of talking about
so
things.
Manny was right.
Yeah,
he was so right. He was so right. And like I said, we know him. We remember when he was in the community when yeah. we were working with Matt Sanchez in the All for One and Hoods in the Woods program and how he did Surf to Turf. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, so Manny's he's the real deal. But then you have other college professors who profess to be from the neighborhood, who profess to be the real deal, and they're not. And all they do is exploit the people in the community so they can get larger and bigger grants.
On the other hand, I was where you were at USC. I would have a bright kid for 16 weeks, and then they'd be gone. And the impact I had on them was I felt negligible. And I decided that 50% was our attrition rate. There was something wrong with the school system. I needed to get down in the trenches and find out why these kids weren't prepared for college. I got down there and I found out these kids are just hungry for knowledge. So my kids now, we have one from our program is at Westmont College. He's going to graduate probably this year. Every kid I work with goes to college.
We have 100% college growing rate through the Oxford.
But you have Academy. To wait 5 years to see it.
You're listening to AHA Presents About Education. We'll be right back with our final segment.
Here's a question. Do you enjoy experiencing the best of Santa Barbara? Tasty restaurants, scenic hiking, local banking experts. That's right, local banking experts. Montecito Bank and Trust was voted best bank again by the Santa Barbara Independent, Santa Barbara News Press, and Santa Ynez Valley News Readers. Plus, they have over 40 years of experience, 10 branches from Solvang to Westlake, a convenient on-the-go mobile banking app, and a savvy team of local decision makers. Visit Montecito.bank today. Montecito Bank and Trust, member FDIC.
You're invited to dine indoors or on the secluded garden patio, the sunny patio, or the covered creekside patio with fireplace at Pierre Lafond's Montecito Wine Bistro, where you'll enjoy the popular pizzas and many other dishes from the wood-burning oven, daily specials from Chef Victor, and selections from the elevated wine menu featuring Lafond and Santa Barbara Winery wines. Open daily at 11 for lunch, wine, cocktails, dinner, incredible desserts, and a daily happy hour from 3 to 6 with very unique appetizers.
in the Plaza del Sol, Montecito Village.
Founded by a UCSB grad, Deckers Brands has grown into a global driver of lifestyle footwear. From humble beginnings in 1973, Santa Barbara has been a key element of the business, defining the company's culture, providing home base for many employees, and inspiring product innovation each year. For a first-hand experience, stop by the Deckers Brands headquarters in Goleta, 250 Coromar Drive, from 10 to 7, Monday through Saturday, 11 to 5 Sunday, and shop their new brand showcase retail test lab. Guaranteed, you'll see a new side to Deckers' portfolio, from footwear to handbags to home furnishings.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable home ownership and has repaired over 35 homes through the Your Brush with Kindness home repair program. This spring, Habitat will begin construction on its fourth affordable housing development in Southern Santa Barbara County. Located in Carpinteria, Habitat will build three new affordable homes available for home ownership by qualified low-income families. Support Habitat by volunteering, becoming a monthly donor, or shopping at the Habitat Restore. More information can be found at sbhabitat.com. Habitat.org or calling 692-2226.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA helps teens manage their emotions, support their peers, and serve their community. We're here with Keith Terry, Executive Director of Y Strive for Youth, Michael Wild, their Educational Director, and J.P. Harada, the Outreach Director. And, you know, this has really been an eye-opener for me. And one of the things that is really unfortunate, I think, is that you really keep a low profile. I thought I knew who everybody was, and I have never heard of this group, and now my eyes are opened. How do we support Y Strive?
Well, I think the best way to support Y Strive is to support the organizations that your youth are already in. If you have your child in a program, it's not a babysitting service. It's an opportunity for you to enrich the life of your child through the program that they're in. If they're not in a program and they're one of the youth that we would work with, just contact us. And that helps support us.
How do we do that? How do we contact you?
You can contact at the office number, which is 805-576-7627. And I either answer it or you can leave a message. Or we have a website. I don't know if we have a contact form on the website.
But the website is Y, just the letter Y, Strive for Youth, Santa Barbara. Y Strive for Youth, Santa Barbara.
Y Strive for Youth.org.
But if you Google it, it will
if
say.
If you Google it, it'll pop up.
Santa Barbara.
It'll pop up. The other ways that we need help, Neil, is the age old thing. We need to raise funds. You know, we provide food, clothing, transportation for our youth.
You're a 501(c), which means it's tax deductible.
Totally tax deductible, but we also earn some of our income. We earn about 30% of the money we need to satisfy our budget. We have three youth businesses, so we need contracts for moving, for cleaning, for repairs. We need businesses to offer jobs to the young men that we train. We need tutors. We need volunteers to help to take some of the work off of checking on the families we have to we maintain contact with over the next 5-6 years.
And we need consistent helpers. So if you have people who are older and who say, you know, when I got old, I thought people would listen to me, you know, and I feel marginalized. Nobody cares what I think or believe. Yeah. Well, that can be of use. Yeah. You know, I mean, there are kids who need to read, who need to learn to read.
So you need money, but we also, if you don't have money, there are many ways to help. If you're a business, there are, and this is their website actually is very good. It explains exactly what their services are that you can use. Why not use them versus somebody else? Because you're helping not only the community, you're getting a really good service. If you do have money, these donations, what they do on a shoestring is absolutely amazing. Do you have any events that come up each year?
Well, we've had events in the past, but right now we're in the process of restructuring to build our infrastructure to come out with some new improvements in the future. One of our biggest needs right now, though, Neil, is a location. We need to consolidate what we do, you know, into one location, because right now Michael is teaching out of his home. JP works out of his car, and I work out of my home. So someone with property, with a building that's sitting empty, Some place like that would be great.
Okay, so besides money and besides using their services, if anyone has space, this would be a wonderful thing to do. Keith Terry, Executive Director of Wise Drive, thank you so much. Thank you so much, Michael Weil. Thank you so much, J.P. Arata, for all you do. You do terrific work. And this is AHA Presents About Education. We'll be right back here next week.